proudly student and listener supported community radio. CIUT 89.5 FM, celebrating 35 years as the sound of your city.
And welcome, welcome, welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good evening, Phil, and good to be in the studio.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and not out in the...
Well, it's going to rain, and we're going to get poured on, but...
We might get lightning.
Yeah.
The White House got lightning. You heard about that?
Yeah. Well,
someone was killed there in front of the White House.
Three people, and of course, some people will find some sort of supernatural explanation. It was a lightning
storm. Were they?
Yeah, but it's a lightning storm. Those things happen. Yeah.
Well, this is the Taylor Report, and we've been following the story of this very important Canadian Union, Unifor. They're having a convention, and in a few minutes we're going to be talking to someone, a live report from the convention. Certainly, all readers of, the popular press has heard about this issue of alleged corruption at the top of the union and who was involved, who was not involved. And some of the people who were named or talked about a lot, they are running for the top job. And I think the vote for the leadership is probably in a couple of days. I don't think it's today. But we're going to get a feel for this. There's an article in today's Globe and Mail where among the people interviewed is Tony Leah, who's the gentleman we're going to be talking to. Did you see the Globe report today?
Yes, I read the whole thing. It was a very good report. Tony's comments were very much
germane.
Cogent.
Yes, cogent. Yeah, we should say, of course, we come from a broader, you might call it, if we're going to say this, class point of view. I know you're not supposed to mention class. It's because the distinctions in North America in class are so clear and becoming clearer by the day, practically. Even what the Globe today is reporting that, during the pandemic, when emergency funds were being distributed, strangely enough, that more of it went to companies and corporations disproportionately than, of course, to the people who would be suffering from it.
I'm shocked. I'm just
shocked.
Yeah.
It is shocking. It's the kind of thing you can't.
No, I mean, I'm shocked that the Globe and Mail would admit it.
Oh, now you're okay. I'll take that. By the way, Phil has a program each Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m., Classical Underground. And there's occasionally heard on regularly heard on Critic Circle, and Saturdays, 9 a.m. So we're going to get a live report, find out what's going on. There was a demonstration. This would be the lead-off for us. Pensioners, people drawing pension from their membership in the union and years at various, mainly auto plants, I guess you could say. They had banners today at the convention, so we want to hear about that and how they were received. Please, everybody, follow this story. Stay with it, because it has a larger context given to us by Sid Ryan a couple weeks ago, which is most of us believe there should be, workers should have the right to organize and should be organized in far greater numbers than they are. And we need labor organizations like the Metro Labor Council, the Ontario Federation of Labor, and the various provincial federations of labor across the country, and then the Canadian Labor Congress. And Sid Ryan brought that perspective of what is the point of view of those who are quarreling now over the direction of the Unifor. Anyway, I believe we're joined by Tony Leah himself. Are you there, Tony?
I am, Phil. How are you?
Very good. I'm glad to be talking to you today. And we're glad to see you quoted in the Globe and Mail and helping to set a context for what the issues are at the convention. And you've been observing or attending there.
Yes. Yeah, I've been at the convention all day. It just adjourned for the day.
Mm-hmm. There was a, you were part of a demonstration of pensioners, right, who were, and you brought the issue of when is there going to be an increase in...
Exactly.
It's okay. Yes. Could you talk about that?
Sure. There was a busload of retired workers that came from Oshawa. Most of them are retired from the auto industry, from General Motors, in fact. And they haven't had an increase in their pensions since 2007.
2007.
So 15 years while the purchasing power of their pensions has been eaten away, and particularly... now that inflation is soaring, it's a real problem for retired workers. Inflation has been 36.6% over that period of time, and they haven't had one penny of an increase.
Hmm. Why is this hung on for so long? Wasn't there ideas about it becoming incremental and that kind of thing, or being inflation?
In fact, until 2007, in the auto industry, the CAW, as the union was called then, had pensions that were indexed to inflation. That was one of the first significant achievements that were made in bargaining after the split from the UAW.
Mm-hmm.
And it really meant a huge difference for retirees. There were major increases in pensions, and all pensions were indexed to inflation. And, of course, the pretext for ending that was the financial crisis in 2008-2009.
Oh, when we all had to tighten our belts.
The problem was, we had our belt tightened for us, and the corporations... we're making profits by the next year. GM started making profits again in 2010, but they didn't turn around and say, now we have to restore what we took away from the workers or the retiree. And it's only gotten worse since then. Last year...
Sounds like they tied your hands.
They tied our hands. They haven't tied our mouths, though. We were using our mouths today. But in 2021... General Motors made the most profits they've ever made in their history as a corporation. And they rewarded their executives. Mary Barra, who's the CEO, made $37.5 million in 2021.
Well,
and that was up 23% in 1 year.
For her. So that was
her.
23% in 1 year.
In 1 year. And retirees have had 0% in 15 years. And the people from Oshawa who came on the bus to the convention today wanted to remind the delegates, the leadership, the bargaining committees of the union of those facts, and to demand that their interests be recognized and fought for in bargaining. And we got a great response from the delegates at the conventions, by the way. We had signs, we had a banner, and the delegates...
Yeah, how did the day start? Where were you? Were you in the hall or were you outside? Well, where were you?
I was at the convention as an observer, but the bus arrived just before noon. And so I went and met them, and we got our signs out, and we set up in front of the escalators where all the delegates were leaving at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And so they all saw our banner and signs and demands. We got a really warm response to the extent that the people organizing the convention decided that they needed to recognize us. And so when the lunch break was over, they invited us to come into the convention hall and be recognized by all the delegates, by everybody who was there. We marched past the platform guests and through the convention, and got a tremendous response, really a standing ovation from everybody at the convention. So it was a good moment. I think it was important that we were recognized, that our issues were recognized. Of course, it's only the first step, and we're going to try and keep the pressure on for when Unifor bargains with the auto companies next September. Mm-hmm. But it's also part of a broader issue, which is that we want the union to return to fighting for gains, improving wages, improving pensions. We have a system in the auto industry now where workers hired in the past 10 years don't get the same pension, don't get a defined benefit pension. The pensions have been two-tiered the same as wages are. And so we want this to be part of reversing that direction. And we have to be winning gains for workers if we want workers to join our union or any union. Yeah. They don't want to join a union that's giving things up.
You're echoing Bob White. Isn't that what that was almost a mantra of his, right?
That was his mantra. Workers don't need a union to go backwards. And that's true. We need a union so that we can resist the attacks of corporations and make gains. Pensions is so important. People who know the history of the labor movement and auto workers in particular know that the idea of a pension was considered outrageous for workers.
A worker's dream.
Workers didn't get a pension. You're supposed to work till you fell over and died. Yeah. Pensions were just for the executive.
Put your nickels in a can and then spend that when you retire.
And unions changed that. They changed it in collective bargaining, and spilled over to legislation, and we ended up getting public pensions that didn't exist before. So we have to get back into that approach, that frame of mind of we're fighting to make things better, not just to,
Well, let me ask about that. As they go into bargaining, and this is, you said that there hasn't been an increase since, is it 2007?
2007.
So, okay, they've been bargaining. So where do they put pensions when they're putting together the package or what it is they're going for? Is there a list, and is pensions always on it, or is it not even on the list?
Well, it's really kind of hard to know. It obviously, whether it's on the list or not, it's not something that they ever brought back as part of the collective agreement. So I think it's fair to say they did not treat it as a priority item. It's one of those things that, to me, is a function of the concession approach. When you have a second tier of workers who don't have that pension at all, and workers who are making far lower wages, then they start looking at you funny if you demand increases in pensions for the people that still have them. They look at you and they say, yeah, well, you've got a pension. These other workers don't even have that, so why should we fight for you? And that's what people said at the beginning. That's what Bob White said at the beginning, that if you start to give up those concessions, you divide the workforce and it spreads.
Yes.
And that's really what we've experienced. I think that's an important subtext to the battle that's going on in the convention right now over the next leadership. Yeah. Of the union.
In terms of and you have three names that are now, as far as I've heard about, are in play to become the new leader. I'm not aware that any of them actually discuss pensions.
Well, they have all said nice things about, wanting to support the retirees and improve things, but I haven't heard a forthright, clear endorsement of the demands that we're putting forward.
And could that be because of the unstable ground that you described that they have created, where there are divisions amongst members of the same union because of the disparity?
It makes it difficult, right? They don't want to. I think that some leadership is doesn't want to put too much emphasis on pensions if other people are going to think, oh, they're going to reward those old retirees, and they're not going to do anything for us. Mm-hmm. It's created this, rather than unity, it's created this sense of division of, who is going to get the gains, because workers are not equal anymore. If everybody in the industry had the same wage and the same pension, then gains would be for everybody.
Mm. We're speaking.
That's where we need to get back to. We got nods from the candidates. Dave Cassidy and Lana Payne were friendlier and came over and talked to the retirees.
There you go.
Who were demonstrating here today.
Very interesting. We're speaking to Tony Leah. He is from General Motors, Local 222 of Unifor. It's a different kind of convention than you have seen previous, right? I mean, this is
totally different.
Three names in play. Can you describe how it's different?
It's different. It's dramatically different because everything is contested. Unifor conventions up to this one and CAW conventions before that even. All seem to be stage managed. They seem to be like a spectacle, and the delegates weren't really actors. They were like an audience.
Mm-hmm.
There were guest speakers, and there was no debate. There was nothing that was really contested, and there wasn't really hard thinking about what challenges face the union and how to deal with them. Whereas today, they're fighting over everything. They were fighting emotionally over the rules of order, whether
a lot can hang on that. Why would they be so passionate about that?
They don't
agree about anything.
They're ready to contest things, which is refreshing to me. Some of them are seem less serious than others, but. One of the rules that was proposed was that Unifor staff should not be permitted to wear T-shirts or other endorsements of candidates in the convention center.
How'd that go?
Well, there were people that were fighting against it, because especially the Scott Doherty people who apparently have endless funds for buying people T-shirts, and they've got all kinds of people wearing T-shirts. And I guess for a delegate, that's fine. But somebody who's on the staff of the union and is supposed to, and is, by the way, being paid by the union, being paid by our dues to do their job, I don't think should be walking around advertising that they're supporting a candidate.
Well, actually, yes.
For national president.
I think we've spoken to you about this in previous interviews. They're not in the union, are they?
They're assigned membership in union locals, and some of them come out of union locals. So, in a way, they are. But they're the employees of the union, and I don't think it's right for them to be playing a major role in trying to determine who the next leadership of the union is. That should be up to the delegates, and it should be up to the rank and file members.
And did people say that from the mics?
Some people did say that from the mic. That was refreshing to me. And in fact, there's one local.
You're at a real convention. We rarely get to talk to somebody who's at a real one.
One of the locals submitted a resolution saying that the staff, the National Executive Board, should play no role in choosing the next leader instead of the coronation approach we've had up to now, and that no dues money should be spent on union election campaigns. That's pretty good. That's the Alcan aluminum workers in Kitimat, BC. They have quite a fighting history, by the way. And I spoke to a couple of their delegates this morning. They came over to congratulate our retirees, and then they were talking about the role the staff is playing and how how they find that really deplorable.
Kitimat has a great labor reputation, actually. I forget who that was. It was forest workers, or I forget who was in there. It might have been Mine Mill, but Kitimat has quite a history.
Yeah.
When is the vote for the leadership?
On Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah. So the
are they already speaking, or will they sort of do they put up to the mics and have them talk on the day, or
They said that nominators are going to have 5 minutes and the candidates are going to have 5 minutes.
So as of now, there's not a formal nomination yet.
No. The nominations, I don't know if they're on Tuesday or Wednesday, but there'll be a set time for nominations, and then there'll be a set time for the election. And the election should be really quick because everybody has a voting device that looks like a BlackBerry, mm-hmm. and they insert their delegate card into it and vote, and it's almost instantaneous.
Boy. And now, by the way, that's also a first, isn't it? Has that ever happened before?
Yes, it has happened before. That has been the mechanism that Unifor has used since 2013.
Mm-hmm. If you can talk about it, I mean, the topic of the problems that they had, the crisis growing out of the Globe and Mail story, and the fact that the previous president resigned, is that making the floor, and in what form?
Yeah, there was a report on the issue and the investigation report this afternoon. And Lana Payne gave a brief overview. She said, you know, the delegates should by now have seen all of the National Executive Board minutes and the investigation report. So she just gave a brief overview of it, and then it was open to the delegates to speak to. And that was a really interesting discussion because there was a clear division between delegates who were unhappy that things had gotten out into the press and made the union look bad and seemed to be arguing that it should have been kept more under wraps. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, there were delegates who rejected that really strongly and said that sweeping things under the rug was wrong, didn't benefit the union, didn't benefit the members, and that they thought everything should be mm-hmm. revealed to the members. And from what I observed, you know, there was applause for both points of view, and it was pretty evenly divided. So it mm-hmm. was a real significant debate.
Mm-hmm.
There was no resolution on the floor. It was just people responding to and having an opportunity to discuss.
So there's not a vote on accepting or not accepting a report or any such thing as that. It was just the report was done and people were allowed to talk about it.
And they were talking about it. And some people asked questions and people expressed their points of view. And the division in the convention was really clear.
Mm-hmm. You were, as far as I remember, they're expecting to have a speech given by the Minister of Labor. Is that who it is?
Yes, it is. The Federal Minister of Labor, yeah.
The Minister is going to talk tomorrow?
He's on the agenda.
Is he supporting any candidate? Or?
Is any candidate supporting him? That's on the agenda, and it's one of the things that there doesn't seem to be a debate about. And there's a few issues that, from my point of view, I think are important for Unifor to confront to really make progress. And that's one that they're not talking about. So alliances with the Liberal Party federally or the Liberal Party of Ontario, I think, have hurt our union. But nobody's talking about that. Mm-hmm. The rating has hurt our union and has hurt the Canadian labor movement, mm-hmm. and I haven't heard yet anybody talk about the rating as a problem or as an error. Mm-hmm. And, I think that at some point you don't make progress unless you confront what the problems have been.
Well, exactly. I mean, you had this issue of some of the former leaders and advisors who wrote an open letter about the great progress, and they didn't and even address the problem. They talked about solidarity and being in basically having a vision, but the vision didn't include a discussion of alliance with other unions. That is the Labor Congress in the OFL.
There's still a problem in this union, at least. Maybe in other unions, of always wanting to say, we are the best, we are great, we are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got serious problems, you're not going to fix them if you take that approach. I particularly noticed that in mm-hmm. some of the people from the Doherty camp Scott Doherty camp who actually have said repeatedly, this is the best union in the world.
In the world?
In the world.
In the world. Oh.
You know, I mean, because they have to top other people.
Oh, by the way, I have to ask you this, because I read the Globe today, and they listed your membership at 315,000.
Yes.
But I believe that in the report and minutes, somebody indicated that's actually not the case.
That's not the case. The union follows a PR approach, I guess you could call it, of publicizing a number which they think makes them look better, even when they know it's not accurate. And in fact, you're right, it's discussed in the minutes because the research director is talking about what the numbers actually are, which are, as of 2021 anyway, 260,000. So 55,000 less than the number that they circulate. And the other number, he says, is the political number. And he calls it the public-facing number.
Wow.
Very odd terminology, but you can understand what he's saying. He's saying, this is the number we're going to tell other people because it makes it sound better. But amongst ourselves, we know that we're down to 260,000.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, is substantially below where they started in 2013. And that's what makes it a problem. The Globe story that you're talking about repeats what Unifor says about themselves, which is, we are growing.
Yeah, they put it at 315,000.
Yeah, and they said that they've grown, but they have it exactly the opposite.
That's kind of important. Transparency is even honesty can be important. At a certain point, you say,
honesty is tough. Honesty is tough when you're in a room full of people who want to say, we're the best, we're great, we're wonderful.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get you where you need to get to, which is...
Well, saying that, by the way, is classic pandering, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we see it in the political, for example, the leadership of the United States. They all agree that they have to go through a pandering exercise as we're the greatest, most wonderful people, even though there's no data to support that. It's kind of a sad situation. We're very fortunate we could talk to you. In 1 week from now, we hope we can talk to you again because... we're going to have big news to talk about.
There'll be lots of news by then, yes.
Yeah. Well, Tony Leo, thank you very, very much. It's been very informative. CIUT listeners are fortunate. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
Bye-bye. That was Tony Leo. He is political action chair. There's an asterisk beside that, but we won't go into the asterisk on this program. I think we have a little music, and we don't even know what it is, but it's be enjoyable, and we'll come back.